The 29-year-old suspect in the New York terror attack on pedestrians yesterday is a truck driver and has known addresses in both New Jersey and Florida. Authorities are now trying to piece together the motives of the suspect who arrived in the U.S. from Uzbekistan in 2010. Devlin Barrett is the national security reporter for The Washington Post, and he's covered yesterday's terrorist attack in New York City. Devlin, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
So can you bring us up to speed and explain what has happened in Lower Manhattan?
Well, at this point in the investigation, they keep seeing indications that he appears to be what people sometimes refer to as a lone wolf terrorist, meaning they're not finding a lot of connections to other people, either domestically or internationally, but they're still looking, and that can change. What we know is that he left a note declaring his allegiance to ISIS, the Islamic State. So that appears to be the central motive of what happened here. And we also know that he's likely to survive the gunshot injury he suffered. So investigators will have a good chance at talking to him and learning more about why he did what he did.
So Saipulo Saipov, he underwent surgery yesterday for this gunshot wound. And so you think that investigators will be able to do some interviews with him, or interviewing going on perhaps right now?
Perhaps right now. I mean, it all depends on to what degree he wants to talk, for example. But often they do want to talk when terror suspects are captured alive. So we're, you know, waiting to hear on that. We're still doing reporting. And they're also looking into, investigators are also looking into his past life in Uzbekistan to see if there's anything about that that might explain what happened here. But so far, they keep saying, you know, we have found nothing to tie him to other people or other groups.
So if we think he acted alone, could there still be other cells in the city?
Well, there's always terror suspects in different parts of the country. You know, at any given time, the FBI is watching, you know, watching is probably the wrong word. At any given time, there's more than 1,000 open cases in the U.S. where the FBI is trying to determine if someone poses a danger of terrorism. So in that sense, there's always other suspects somewhere around the country. But what we're told is related to this specific suspect, they don't see any connections to anyone else. And they're still looking, but they don't see those.
What do we know about Central Asia and recruiting for ISIS?
Well, it has been a recruitment, a place to draw recruits for ISIS. You know, a lot of the fighters who went to Syria and Iraq to fight came from that part of the world. And it is, there are certainly very militant groups in those countries, like Uzbekistan and around Uzbekistan. But again, it's tricky to, I don't want to extrapolate too quickly and just say, well, he's part of the militancy of those groups, because those are more established things. And this person, the early indications are this person basically decided to do this on his own, as best they can tell, and they're trying to understand better the reasons why.
Talking right now to Devlin Barrett, he's a national security reporter for The Washington Post, and he's covered yesterday's terrorist attack in New York City, where a 29-year-old man drove his rental truck into a bike path, into a pedestrian path, killing 8 people. Devlin, President Trump responded to the attack on Twitter, saying we must not allow ISIS to return or enter our country after defeating them in the Middle East and elsewhere. Enough. He also tweeted that he's ordered the Homeland Security Department to step up its extreme vetting program. What does this mean when we need to step up our, quote, extreme vetting program? What could this mean?
Well, as you may remember, there's been a big legal fight going on basically since the first days of the administration over changes Trump wanted to make in immigration screening, banning visitors from certain countries, you know, suspending refugees from entering the country. And what you could see last night was within hours of this attack, the White House was saying that this attack is a good reason to further tighten those restrictions and those screening processes. to try to keep dangerous people out of the country. Now, there's a big resistance in the courts to that. He's, you know, the Trump travel ban in its various forms has gotten a lot of pushback from judges and from civil rights groups. So, you know, the expectation, and clearly I think what the president was signaling last night, was that there's going to be a bigger and new fight over those restrictions. And he's going to use this terror attack as evidence of why he's right on these immigration issues.
So he'll have more momentum on his side to get these measures in place.
He might. I mean, the president has a lot of authority to alter exactly how screening is done at the borders, but that authority is not absolute. And what you've seen through the travel ban fights is that when courts think he's gone too far, they push him back and they reject some of his efforts. It's really unclear from just the tweet what he actually means by toughening up extreme vetting. So I think a lot of whether he will be successful or whether things will change very much depends on what specifics he's talking about, because the specifics will have to be reviewed by the courts.
Getting back to the suspect here, Saifullah Saipov, what do we know about him? Any traction on social media activity, or what does his record look like?
Seems to be very little social media presence that we can find so far. What we know is that he came to this country in about 2010. We spoke to some folks he stayed with when he first came here. And what they said was, you know, he came here and in about a year or so later, he had a serious girlfriend. Some have described her as a wife. Some have described her as a serious girlfriend. And he has kids. So he's a man with you know, a relationship and kids. And he has moved around a little bit inside the U.S. He lived in Ohio for a while. He lived in Tampa, Florida for a while. But we're told he's been living in recent months in Paterson, New Jersey. And when we've been to Paterson, you know, he seems to be more or less a part of that community and an Uber driver. And he seems to have settled there had a career as both a truck driver and an Uber driver. And it seems to be a fairly nondescript life up until he decides to rent a Home Depot truck and try to kill people.
So would this be considered foreign terrorism, or is it homegrown terrorism?
I think the way the FBI is thinking about it right now, it's what you would call foreign-inspired terrorism, meaning it is a person here, is a person who probably is not, acting at the specific direction of ISIS, but who, you know, has seen ISIS messages, has listened to some of their arguments and decided, you know, one of the things ISIS says is, wherever you are, if you support us, you know, use whatever tool at hand you can to kill people. And in the initial stages, it looks like that he took that advice, that general advice, and carried through on it.
Well, despite the attack on Halloween, Manhattan went on with its annual Halloween parade in Greenwich Village that attracts big crowds. Apparently, hundreds of people lined the parade route yesterday. What's been the attitude of New Yorkers and organizers so soon after this attack?
It's interesting. I think in a few years ago, you might have seen a different reaction, but this year and in this climate, people were pretty adamant from the get-go that they were not going to cancel the parade, that they could keep the parade safe, and that they wanted to send a message that they weren't going to stay behind closed doors because this had happened. A lot of people showed up for that parade early, very early, which I think speaks to the level of, you know, a willingness to make a point, make a public point that, you know, people in New York aren't scared. Frankly, you see similar things in other cities, but oftentimes officials worry so much about whether or not they can protect everyone that officials themselves will decide to cancel events. New York's a little different in that New York's police force, the NYPD, is huge. It's basically a standing army inside a city. So they have the manpower and the resources to protect a large event like this. And it was interesting to me that, you know, the city really decided to make a statement, I think, in saying we're going forward with our parade. It's a fun parade. It's a great tradition in New York, frankly. It would have been very sad if they'd canceled it. And I think it shows a desire to make a point publicly when terrorist attacks happen.
So, Devlin Barrett, what is on tap for reporting today? What happens next as part of this investigation?
Well, I think we really have to dig deeper into the question of flash to bang. Flash to bang is a term that investigators use to describe how long a person takes getting radicalized, you know, working their way up to doing something like this. The other dynamic that I think we'll see come into play is, if was there anything that might have been missed in his life leading up to this that investigators should learn from and be more aware of next time. I've been told that, you know, the FBI was not investigating him prior to this. He didn't appear to be on anyone's radar as a terrorism threat. But, you know, they're still digging into that.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Devlin, thanks so much for joining us. Devlin Barrett is the national security reporter for The Washington Post, covering yesterday's terrorist attack in New York City.